We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL AM 580, FM 90.9, HD3, and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson, our technical director, Jason Croft. First Friday of the month, July 1st, dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are back with us. Carol and Jim are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs. Jim and his wife, Robin, they raise Malamutes. Carol, she's got a golden and a doodle. So, listeners, if you have questions, comments about dogs, dog training, dog behavior, give us a call and talk to Jim and Carol. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Good to see you. How
it's
are you?
It's great to see you this morning, Celeste.
How are the dogs?
Getting warm, yeah. Panting.
Yes.
Wishing it was winter.
Yes.
I think. It's hard to tell what a dog is wishing.
I don't know. Right at the moment, it's not too bad. It's overcast in Urbana and 75 degrees, but we're looking for a really warm
It was
weekend.
Raining when I came in. Mm-hmm. And you know, it hasn't rained around here for a long time, so.
I do believe that Sunday night we were.
Sunday night? Okay.
It was like a monsoon.
Okay. That's four
but that's
days,
okay.
5 days.
It's been a few days.
Yes. You know, I think I'm going to quit listening to weather forecasts. Because I thought yesterday was just splendid. I took the afternoon off, and it was beautiful. I worked out in the yard last night, and then I was watching the news, and it was like I missed the apocalypse of heat. I thought it was beautiful. So I think that when
yesterday
they tell you—
Yesterday wasn't bad at all.
I thought yesterday was gorgeous. But.
Well, you can gather all the news you need from the weather report. But on the other hand, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows.
So true. But it was a lovely evening, and today is not living up to the, it was supposed to be 95 or something, 94, 90?
Two.
I don't know. Yeah, 92.
But it's actually chilly out and cloudy.
Well, who knows? The weather
I suppose
could
if you're used to living on the sun, it's chilly.
The forecast is for partly sunny skies this afternoon, so we'll see.
But I love summer, so it's okay.
Yeah. So what's new at the club?
Well, we just started our summer session of classes this past week. Unfortunately, the Monday night classes will not meet on this Monday because of the 4th of July. So we'll be extending our classes an additional week. But we are just full of dogs and people, and everybody's happy. 4-H is about finished with their several-month-long canine curriculum that they teach. And then, I'll mention this at our general meeting Tuesday night, which I have to post this afternoon. We're having one of the representatives of the ASPCA invited to come and recount her experiences and activities in the Joplin, Missouri area. She was there for they call it the reunification process and the adoption process. So it was an amazing adoption event they held last weekend. Like 500 dogs and cats were adopted. People came from either 24 or 28 states, drove huge distances to be there as part of the event to adopt an animal. So pretty impressive numbers.
Yeah. Were they involved in getting to the scene immediately?
The ASPCA?
Yeah.
I'm not certain how soon they were on the scene, but they needed to go and find all the animals and get them in shelters. There were several that were just many that were still at large.
I think going back to Katrina now, there's been an evolving kind of approach to this, to rescue and relief for companion animals and for livestock as well.
That's true. People forget about the livestock. that suffer so when there's an event like that. But so I'm looking forward to what she has to share with us on Tuesday evening.
Very interesting. And then maybe next month you can fill us in
sure.
on what she had to say.
Be happy to.
This is Focus. We're talking with dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, join us with a phone call or by email this morning, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, given the, maybe we'll go back to the hot weather for just a minute and talk a little bit about what's needed to keep animals comfortable when it does get uncomfortable.
Well,
You have to remember, dogs don't sweat. If you take nothing away from this program but that you will have learned something very important. Dogs don't sweat except through their pads, their paws, and a little bit around their tongue. Since they don't sweat, how do they shed heat? Well, they pant. And so their lungs are their main, the main way they cool off. If they're put in an area where it's hot, you know, let's say 105 degrees, average dog temperature is about 101.1, so they're sucking in air that's hotter than their body. Mm. Humans don't have that problem because we were just talking about mm-hmm. this earlier.
We were just talking about, he said he was hot and sweaty.
We sweat, which means water comes out of our bodies. So even if it's 105, our bodies are still cooling from the sweat. But not a dog. So you don't want to leave a dog anywhere where the temperature is going to be high, even for a short time, because it doesn't take that long for them to go into distress. Two, if your dog is down because of heat-related things, go to the veterinarian right away.
Right.
Don't try to cool them down or anything like that. The problem with a heat stroke in dogs, I don't know what it's called, heat something, is that the main problem is that the blood is losing fluid. So it's like they're pushing sludge through their arteries. And they have to get fluids very quickly. And usually that's done either intravenously or in a real emergency, IM, just shoot it right into them. Getting them cool is important, but it's not nearly as important as getting them to the vet. So on your way to the vet, you can, you know, put ice on them and all that sort of stuff. But delaying going to the vet because you're trying to cool the dog off is a very bad idea.
Okay.
You could lose them, as a matter of fact, and that's happened.
Yes.
One thing I found out that was interesting is an attempt to cool off as you're going to the vet, alcohol, rubbing alcohol, like on those swipes. Wiping that on the pads of their feet will help. It's certainly not – this is why you're on your way to your veterinarian, to do that, to help expedite some kind of cool down. And, you know, another animal that doesn't perspire is the pig. And pigs will die in extreme heat. So
– I think most animals don't sweat. Horses sweat.
Cows.
But
pigs don't at all, and they'll
die very
quickly.
How about rhesus monkeys? I don't know if they sweat.
I don't know either.
What do you say we take a call?
Sure.
This is a listener waiting for us in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. Our family's thinking of getting a dog, and we've been doing our research and getting the children prepared to have a dog. And my two favorite breeds are Labs and Samoyeds. And I've had a lot of people give me a warning, I guess, about Samoyeds. I've known, I don't know, maybe a dozen separate dogs in my life, Samoyed dogs, and I've always known them to be wonderful animals. And I don't understand why I'm getting, and nobody really gives me any, what I'd say, a good reason. They just, oh, I don't know if I'd want that kind of a dog with children. And I don't understand what the concern is. I've always known they'd be wonderful, the ones I've known. So, and also we were thinking of doing a rescue, and people have expressed concerns about that too. So if you could just give me any information on that, I'd appreciate it.
How old are the kids?
Two teenagers and then a 5-year-old, like a 13, a 14, and a 5-year-old.
And do you have a fenced-in yard?
Yes.
Ah, excellent.
I don't ever remember anything about Samoyeds that would be
No, I've known
bad,
a lot
but
of
I, but you would know more than yeah. about that breed than I.
I'll be a little facetious here, so you know, send your protest letters to not to me anyway. But
send them to me.
You know, I've met three people from Chicago, and they were all rotten. So everybody in Chicago must be rotten. Whoever the you know, if every dog is different, every dog has its own personality, just like humans. They are not as complicated as we are in any sense, but they all have different personalities. Generally speaking, Samoyeds are wonderful dogs. The only two problems I would see with a pet are, first, they shed a lot. The nice thing about shedding, though, is as opposed to a lab, the lab has short hair that gets into the rug and you'll never see it, you know, it builds up. Whereas Samoyed shed hair is floating on everything as it's too long to sink, and you just run a wet mop over it and you pick it right up. So all dogs shed, all people shed, but the Samoyed and other dogs shed seasonally. That is, they're not shedding constantly, but especially in the spring and the fall, they're going to blow out their coat, as we say. The Samoyed, I think, has a double coat too. So it has an outer coat and a softer, more woolly undercoat. It's usually the undercoat that gives you the problem. It just shoots out of the dog. They tend to keep their outer coat a little longer. Okay. The other problem, and Samoyed people can call in protest, but they tend to bark a lot. They bark more than the Malamutes, for example, or the Huskies. And, of course, they're all in the kind of the same northern dog class there, the Sams, the Mals, and the Huskies. And the Sammies tend to bark more than the other dogs. The Siberians and the Malamutes tend to howl a lot, whereas the Sammies tend to bark. I don't know why. But I've never, ever met a Sammy that wasn't a very friendly, nice family
they
dog.
They even call it the Sammy smile because they mm-hmm. always seem to be grinning
They're
and happy.
Just wonderful temperaments. So
right. That's what all the ones I've known have been just wonderful temperament. And so I didn't understand why people were expressing concern.
You'd have to talk to them. And people, you know, as I said, I don't think every Samoyed ever born was a nice dog. And if you okay. ran into one of the bad ones, you know,
that forms your opinion
and you generalize
them.
And say, well, one Sam is bad, therefore all Sams are bad.
There's a Samoyed rescue that's fairly active right in this area.
I've
seen them at events. And, you know, go to the breed club website, go to the rescue sites, and you'll learn more about because I'll be honest.
Uh-huh.
And you'll learn more about the breed traits than you will from somebody that had a random encounter at some point in their life, and that's the way I would look at it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener in Piatone, line 4. Hi.
Hey, good morning. Happy 4th of July, first off.
Hey, oh, same to you.
Is it the 4th already?
No.
Coming up?
Monday.
No.
No, I don't want to. I know this summer's going by awful fast, so anyway, I got a couple things, and I want to say one thing is that I know my aunt used to have two Samoyeds. And they tend to bark a lot, but I'll tell you, my last dog that I had was a Malamute. And she howled, but she didn't howl all that much. In fact, my dog now barks more than she did, you know. So they're great dogs. And like you say, they shed like a son of a gun. And you can build pillows out of their
hair. Oh, yeah, yeah. People weave it and make clothes out of it.
And the other thing is she was concerned about getting from a shelter or something. Well, I got mine from a adoption agency. Great dog. And I think she's got a combination of my last dog and my other dog before that. So I've always had dogs. And I think she's got a combination of all my dogs, which is kind of goofy because she gets to be a real ton of fun. I've had her for a couple of years, and she had Parvo at first, so a lot of people got turned off and didn't. Like, wasn't quite sure how she'd turn out. the best dog I've ever had, honestly. She's great. The only downfall, and this is the reason I'm calling, is that when I'm walking down, she wants to play. She's friendly with everybody and everything, and she wants to play with all these other dogs. Well, the problem with that is she kind of is a little bit hyper, and, she's in that stage, like she's like a teenager or something. She wants to just run and jump on all the time, the other dogs. And I'm trying to keep her on walks from doing that. So she sees another dog, she wants to take off and go play with him. Out of sight, out of mind. All of a sudden, boom, she's gone. Yeah, what do you do? Now, I've gone through classes before, but, it gets to be kind of a problem with certain other dogs. I'm just, well, what do you guys suggest?
Well, I think it's bad if your dog is mean and rotten and goes after other dogs. But a slightly less concerning problem is if they're wonderful and loving and go after other dogs in order to play, because they can cause a ruckus either way. And very often in our training classes, it's the second problem that people have. They can't get their dogs to sit and stay while the tester comes up and pets them because they're just so friendly and they want to jump all over the tester. And what kind of dog did you say you had?
She's half lamb, half shepherd.
Okay.
She's about 55 pounds. She's not very tall. She's,
How old?
She's short and starky. She's probably about two and a quarter years old.
And do you have a fenced yard or area you can work with?
No, it's open, but I've got the electronic fence. It works like a charm. That's the other thing. I had to get it from my Malamute because she was always getting out, and I had to go get her from doggy jail. So that wasn't cheap, but I swear by this fence. I really do. I've had it for years. My first dog had it for 10 years before she passed on. I've had this probably for, since I've had her. So, and it works.
We gave a Malamute female to a friend of ours, and they had an underground electric fence. And the dog figured out that if she stood a certain distance, she'd have to put up with a little tingling from the collar. But eventually the batteries would wear out.
And smart was she?
And she could then just walk out. She was a smart dog. So those things don't always work.
I know. I think my neighbor had that. He ended up putting two collars on him.
Yeah, well.
One in the front, one in the back. And I actually.
In the back.
In the back.
My neighbor put one behind, just in front of the legs, the rear legs. you had to see it. But that dog has never gone across the line ever again. And I'm talking like maybe 7-8 years ago this happened. In fact, I've gotten to the point where I can leave my dog out without a collar sometimes just to see what happens.
In terms of dealing with her friendliness, this is something you're going to have to specifically deal with. And she should be on lead. And you don't want the shock collar and you don't want a pinch collar, just to maybe a dead collar or a choke chain, but you're not going to choke her. And if you took classes, I assume she knows what sit and stay means.
Oh, she knows all that.
Okay. So what you do is you have a friend with a dog similarly on lead. You get her sitting next to you on a sit stay, and you have a friend then start walking its dog toward you. And you talk to your dog, stay calm, stay calm. Stuff her with hot dogs or whatever you want. And if she breaks, in other words, if she goes out to the end of the lead, tries to greet, then your friend just turns around and walks away. And you call her back in and have her sit. And then shout to your friend, okay, have your friend turn around and walk back. That's going to take a little while. The dog isn't going to pick this up the first time. And you may have to have sessions, two or three times a week. But the idea is the other guy is going to get closer and closer. And finally, when he's able to get up to you, have his dog sit, have you shake hands, stuff your dog with a filet mignon or something. Give her something just a super treat for that. And then if it's a dog of the right size, then you can let them play together. That's why I'm concerned about having a fenced-in area.
I used to have a fenced in area. Most people where I live are out in the boonies, so we're not we don't have any fences.
Well, as a reward, she not only gets a very nice treat, and you know, something you've never given her before, and that's really good, and she gets to play with the other dog. So she has to learn, you know, not to break and to be calm. And again, that takes a while. Don't give up right away.
Oh, no, no, I'm not. I know it's a long road to haul. It took me a while with the Malamute, so.
Yeah, the Malamutes aren't the smartest dogs.
But everybody told me with the Malamute that it wouldn't happen. I took her to obedience class 3 or 4 times, and actually she was, maybe I just was a rarity, but she did a great job. I mean, she was loyal. She did everything she was supposed to. This dog is kind of along the same lines, but I do remember when they were both, when they're young, they all kind of do all, it's a little bit harder to get them to train. It's a little bit longer. Their attention spans, what, 5-10 minutes and all that. So, you know, I just worry about her getting nipped by a bigger dog. So a little bit more focus on my part. But I want to thank Celeste and everybody. I know I listen to this program all the time, and I know I'm a frequent caller, and I've donated, and I can't tell you, people like you, I'm glad you guys come on once a month. I'm glad their support is there monetarily, because there's a few shows that they put on all the time, and I want to thank again, you know, and I can't say enough for WILL. Thanks again for your programming. Love it.
I appreciate your support, because this week I'm asking for a raise.
And I do want to thank everyone who has made a contribution this year, because we had such a huge goal, and we've met it, and it was from our listeners. Mm-hmm. They did it, and so big thank you. And thanks for the kind comments from the gentleman from Piatone, and we hope he has a happy Independence Day as well.
You could hear that Chicago in his voice.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Focus, and this morning we're talking with dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us once a month on the first Friday of the month. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number to call in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. No one waiting on the phones at the moment, and I don't have any email correspondence yet.
With all the money that WILL is now floating in, I think you'd get new candy for the reception
I'm
area.
I'm sorry.
Because this
we'll
stuff has been there for years, I think.
You haven't even made a dent in that.
it's like a rock.
And it's watermelon.
It's very tasty, but
Jim's got a lollipop, an old lollipop, I guess.
Lollipop.
So,
yes.
Okay, we'll work on that.
Some new candy,
we'll
please.
Okay.
Yeah, if I can't get a raise, at least
I do have a candy dish in my office. I could bring
that
into the
studio. That does a lot of good.
Yeah, but that's your own personal. This is for the public.
Stash.
This is at the
I share
entry
though.
Desk.
I'll share.
And
I'll
I carefully picked this out, and I couldn't get the wrapper off it. It just bonded to the.
Well, we're not squandering our funds.
That's right. You certainly aren't spending it on
that's
candy.
That's right.
No spendthrifts. No spendthrifts here. So, okay.
I might. Go ahead.
As we were talking with the fellow from Piatone, you know, in this matter of dogs getting together, and sometimes they come together and they're just exuberant. And other times it's like, grr, you know, they're not. There's something wrong there. How do you read that? And how do you know if you've got a problem? And how do you...
You know, it's kind of funny because most people that don't read those things, they'll let their dogs interact and there's never a problem. I mean, it just seems that way. But when you get to... When you study and know various signs, then I think we, and I'm including myself, tend to be overly cautious about meeting and greeting and interaction. And it always amazes me. You can go to the dog park. I know there are incidents that occur, but they must not be that significant because it doesn't affect the attendance. But people just let their dogs romp and they form friendships and the people form friendships and everything's fine. And initially, when dogs meet, sometimes I think that it can be a bit nerve-wracking for people, but others just are blissfully unaware, and the dogs are just fine, and life goes on. So I don't have a really good answer for that. You just have to know your dog, know. And some dogs, when they meet another, they put up all the warning signs, standing on their toe and tail out straight and or up and moving, and I don't know. It's what a terrible answer I just gave you. But.
A friend of ours had breeds shepherds and gave a shepherd to some people, and they called the next day, and it was a puppy. I think it was about 10 weeks old. You got to take this puppy back. It's mean. It's attacking us. So she goes out, and the puppy was play bowing, and when puppies play, they'll bow and go like that as a challenge to the other puppies, and then they run, and then they chase each other. And she took the puppy back because if the people thought that was aggressive behavior, then probably they shouldn't have a dog.
Let's take another call. This is a listener in Urbana on line one. Hello. Line
Hello?
One? Yes, that's you. Go ahead.
Yes, we've got a pound puppy that we got a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago. She's, we think, Corgi and Beagle mix. And I've noticed lately that after she's been out in the morning with my wife for like a jog, when she comes back, seems like she's acting like she's stiff. That's something I should be worried about, or?
How do you mean?
Well, she just, like when she gets up from the floor, she seems to be kind of walking like, you know, like I would if I was, you know, after I'd been out exercising or something a lot, stiff.
And how old did you say she was?
Oh, 2, maybe 3 years.
Oh, you got her as a puppy.
We got her when she was a year and something old, I think, from the pound.
Okay, so then she's 4 years or so, perhaps.
Yeah, it could be.
I would, you know, your vet would be the best option for you to determine whether or not there is a problem with her being stiff. Does she jog every morning, or is it random, or?
Oh, it's somewhat random, but a lot of mornings.
Mm-hmm.
But she also was, like, away from us for a few weeks because we were gone, so I didn't know if that was just the dog was kind of getting used to it again, or.
Oh, that could be. It could be not a skeletal issue, but a muscular issue. Mm-hmm. That she's just, I'd be feeling it pretty bad if I jogged.
It's not impossible. It's unlikely, and that's why you should go to the vet, that she'd have hip dysplasia.
Okay.
For a smaller dog, dysplasia isn't as big a problem because they don't have the weight that it is for larger dogs, but it still can be a problem, and dysplasia can lead to arthritis fairly
All right.
quickly. And so, and you know, she may be stiff. If, for example, if we saw a dog doing that, we'd just give him aspirin, coated aspirin, just one. A dog that size, you might want to just give a half if you give any, because they're so small. But and that seems to help them.
But it would seem to me if it's just muscular. Mm-hmm. Then once she's up and moving around again, that would be beneficial. If it's skeletal, then she'd still be find it difficult to get up and
feel stiff. Well,
it's hard to tell with that age.
A lot of dogs will compensate for hip dysplasia by growing bigger muscles.
Mm-hmm. And using their front more.
Pushing the hips in together with their musculature and using their fronts more. You can only do that so long.
Yeah, I just be on the safe side and go to your vet and tell mm-hmm. him exactly what you've mentioned and see what their thoughts and recommendations are.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for your advice.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. If you've just tuned in, we're talking this morning with dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. This is Focus. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our conversation continues after a short break.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Paul Greenberg, the author of Four Fish, The Future of the Last Wild Food. It's about what's happened to salmon, sea bass, cod, and tuna. He says we're in a wave of psychological denial of staggering scope, ignoring the fundamental limits the laws of nature placed on ecosystems. Join us.
this afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
This is Focus on AM 580, and we're talking today about dogs. Listeners, your questions and comments about dogs are invited this morning. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. When a dog is getting up in years, or if there is some kind of a physical problem in a younger animal or an older animal, and you want to keep the animal active, but you don't want to go overboard, is your vet the place to go for that kind of information as well?
Yes, but many veterinarians, and we know of a few, also offer chiropractic care, acupuncture, and those are very helpful because I have firsthand knowledge of how helpful that can be for an older dog because I went through that. We'd leave for the appointment. He could barely get into the van. We'd be finished with the appointment. He'd just jump right in there. So it's not anecdotal. I witnessed it. And it certainly, and you've seen plenty of that.
That's the definition of anecdotal, by the way.
Well, whatever.
It's Carol's story.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, I...
But it was.
My undergraduate degree was in mathematics, so I'm a scientist.
But it was a remarkable transformation. And it didn't, you know, but we'd be ready to go again the following week. I mean, it just wasn't a one-shot wonder. But...
There's some vets who specialize in sports medicine for the dogs.
And they have found over the years, it's certainly not new, but after surgeries for, like a blown out knee, and that the physical rehabilitation
that's
is helpful instead of just laying in a crate for 6 weeks.
Yeah, right.
It expedites the healing process.
So, not unlike humans.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, it's remarkable. And then there's also the interactive toy market for dogs that can't be extremely physical, but yet they have something to occupy their mind and have a little bit of fun with and move a bit. So,
the other thing is, remember that dogs are like us in many ways, and you can't decide to take them on a 10-mile run one fine day. You have to build them up.
Yeah.
Start walking and... On the other hand, you know, dogs that are conditioned, for example, sled dogs, they'll get up in the morning, run 125 miles, go to sleep, get up the next day, run 125 miles, and they'll do that for 10 days. And probably they could do it for more. So once they're conditioned, there's really not a lot of limit to what you can do. But you can't just take I have a husky, I'm going to run him 200 miles today.
And you'll see that. You'll see just... You know, walking around town or driving, people running with their dogs, and the dogs are fairly, it's evident they're not accustomed to it, and it just kills me on these hot days.
We shed heat better than dogs because?
We sweat. We perspire.
And the dogs
don't.
But
you'll see that, and it's just, oh my God.
On a hot, humid day, we still sweat, and so we can cool our bodies, but the dogs have to suck in that hot, humid air, and they're just not cooling off.
Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign. Line 2, hi.
Hi. We have a couple of labs, and we take them out in the country in some wooded areas to run from time to time. And when we come back, you know, I always brush them very well and then look for ticks because we're at quite a few trees. And we've been going to the same land out by Allerton for years. And, you know, over the course of the summer, we'll get tick here, tick there, and you know, get them off. This year has been unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. It's been raining.
Wondering if we have their day kennel is like out in the garage and they can go out into the yard and come back in, and we thought perhaps, I mean, we didn't know if ticks laid eggs or whatever because we're picking off literally every day, and we haven't been back out actually for a couple of weeks. Every day we're picking off 2-3 ticks off of each dog.
Are you not using a topical treatment?
No, we have not.
Okay, so there is Advantage 2 Frontline. Plus, they're out there in combination with fleas, mosquitoes, or whatever, fleas. They offer tick protection. They will kill the flea when it bites.
Okay, so that's just anything. Cause we have never used it in the past. We haven't had trouble with them.
I would use it if you have that many ticks that they have them almost every day.
So just some, yeah, it is. It's just almost daily. So it's just something you said, Advantage or Frontline.
Yeah, make sure you buy one, and you can get it from your veterinarian, or you can buy it in a retail store. But make certain you buy those products that are FDA approved, not the real
FDA
cheap
approved
ones, right? And these will run you $50 or $60 for maybe, I think, three applications, four. And it's right. The one you apply between the shoulders.
Right, that's where they go, and that's where you know.
Yeah.
Going.
But no, if I had ticks to that degree, I'd certainly be using something.
Ticks.
And is it a possibility that, do they lay eggs? Do they breed? I really don't know.
I don't believe.
They don't lay the eggs.
I think
the,
their life cycle is they. Now, and they hang out in shrubbery more than trees.
Right. We're walking through some pretty heavy brush.
Right.
So, we know we've always picked them up during the walk, but then when we've come back after we've, you know, checked the dogs and cleaned them and groomed them, we've never had them before. And so the fact that, you know, they're not out walking through shrubbery now, but the ticks keep appearing.
The ticks will suck blood out of, you know, they stick their head in and they suck the
right.
blood, and their abdomen expands to maybe 20 times its size.
They are disgusting.
And then when they are full of blood, they let go.
Right.
And I think they go along the ground. I don't think they lay eggs on the dog.
But why would some ticks, dogs have the big ticks and then the little bitty ticks?
It's just a different, you know, depends on how long they've been on them.
Well, now we need, good, Celeste is researching this for us.
Mm-hmm.
But a dog that's severely infested with ticks can die.
Become anemic. They go some very good health, and you know,
yeah.
again.
And you clean them up, but.
Yeah, we're cleaning
them. Did you ever have
daily,
a tick on yourself?
Yes.
No.
Oh, it's so disgusting.
Yes, it is. It's awful.
It is.
We groom each other when we get back from the park as well. It's usually the clothes and caps and long sleeve shirts.
Yeah, but if you had a tick on yourself, you would be repulsed beyond the nth degree.
With the Malamutes, we have, you know, because we also show the dogs, we have industrial strength blow dryers. But we need those to get down to the skin with their
right,
coat to see if they have ticks.
Well, we have labs, so it's
a little easy. I was thinking, yeah.
It's a little easy. We just run my fingers through.
They're easy to feel.
So what do you do with them after you pick them off?
Actually, my wife's former farm girl, so she puts them in a little jar until they die in case the dogs would get sick or something, so we know what we would have.
Seeing that's also okay, so what is the disease?
Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever.
Fever.
I have a friend that got Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. It's very bad.
It's very bad. And deer are the
deer
carriers
ticks.
Of the ticks that...
Well, so there are quite a few deer out by Allerton. I mean,
We
see deer almost every
time
we go.
Deer ticks is just a name. It's,
but isn't it the deer that usually carries them the most?
No, any wild animal can have a deer tick.
See, I'm not familiar with ticks because they repulse
me. Well, deer
me.
Ticks are the size of a dot on the page. They're not like the brown ticks that we're talking about. They're hard.
What I need to do is basically go get you would recommend doing the treatment, but I don't need to bomb the kennel area.
They're probably not picking it up from the kennel.
No.
They're picking it up from brush or low-hanging leaves.
Or they're
trees.
Falling. Yeah.
Yeah, what they do is they hang up, especially in dogwoods. Or is that a brush?
No,
Robin told
Thank
me
you.
Once.
Thank you all very much.
Oh, he's got to go.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. And I'll share a little bit of information here, but, you know, you can go online if you're able to and just, you know, put in their life cycle of a tick. And just very briefly, they attach right onto the dog or cat, and they're going to hang on for a period of about 3 days. When they are doing that, they are actually engorged, and they also meet up with their mate at that time.
Blah.
They are making eggs so that those eggs can drop off and complete the life cycle. In that life cycle, they also wind up getting into a larval stage, and other animals need to be secondary hosts for that, and depending on the different species of the tick, this host can be different. So,
in a nutshell. Worse than I thought.
Yeah, so
So maybe you should clean his kennel.
Yep.
If the larvae, the larvae, my voice is leaving me. If the larvae
you mean they
are hanging around
you mean
in
that
the kennel.
The eggs turn into worms?
Yep.
Well,
larvae.
Larvae and
worms
are the
I'm so
same.
Sorry, Carol.
The worms
some things I just
on.
Can't tolerate.
The worms crawl on.
Let's move on. Let's ask for another call. 333-9455.
Let's talk about puppies.
800-222-9455. The numbers to call if you're listening and you'd like to talk with Carol and Jim. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. We want to get Carol's mind onto something more pleasant. Puppies would be a good thing, too.
Robin's going to Paris.
She is.
For the International Dog Show.
How exciting.
Yeah, for her. But Jim is not going to Paris. He's staying
home.
Is
the dog going to Paris?
No. She and a friend are just going to watch, to be see and be seen at the International Dog Show.
How lovely.
I'm worried that because Heathrow is shutting down and all this stuff is happening, so she may end up in Denmark someplace. I don't know.
Well, we have an email message from a listener.
It's going to be ticked.
About the Northern Illinois Samoyed Assistance.
Oh, good.
It has a local presence in the Champaign-Urbana area. It is part of the Central Illinois Animal Welfare Coalition. And so you can find them online. The coalition website has links to the Northern Illinois Samoyed Assistance and other participating agencies, and also a directory of agencies that provide companion animal-related services, including adoptions. So there you go. And we've got
so it's a great organization that started a couple of years ago, and they remain strong.
And we have another call. This is a listener in Champaign, Line 1. Hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, I recently got a dog, and after I got her home, from piecing it together with our vet, we realized that she was part of a puppy mill from Danville. And what this poor little dog went through for a couple of years is pretty sad and horrific. And so if you could just comment for people who are pretty naive like I am, when you're getting a dog, or how you can report it or help stop this criminal behavior that's, you know, pretty common in our area, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, it's a broad, broad topic that truly is. The fact that I'm guessing she got one of the breeder dogs, not the puppy, based on what she said. And that's a good thing. We no longer have a pet store here in Champaign-Urbana that sells puppies, which is good. And you'll hear it all the time, and I see so many dogs, and I'll ask where they acquired them, and people are very proud of the fact that they drove to Missouri, they drove to Kansas. Now, that does not mean the dog came from a puppy mill. There are some very good, ethical breeders everywhere, but that's the first thought I often have. Missouri is not that big a deal, but if they drive to Missouri or I don't know. If the great minds of the world are trying to figure out, they pick it every weekend. There's a huge chain called Petland that buys directly from puppy mills. I actually happened to meet a young woman a few weeks ago that worked at our local pet store, and they had her well indoctrinated about the source of the puppies. And I said, "You really believed all that?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah. That they would go out and get the greatest dogs and bring them into their store." And I'm like, "You're annoying Celeste with that sucker."
Oh, sorry.
I was taking my attention away from what Carol was saying.
Okay.
But she was well indoctrinated into the spiel that they would, you know, their employees had to recite to the public. And they all believed it, that, you know, there was some mysterious, mythical Wizard of Oz guy that went to all these kennels and investigated them personally and would choose and select the dogs he'd bring back to the store. Well, that doesn't even make any sense. But she believed it. And I said, it just, you know, especially when people can think for themselves, why would they choose to believe something that is obviously fiction, in my opinion?
You can also now go online and find
breeders
online. So in terms of selecting an animal from a reputable breeder online, what do you look for?
Every breed has a club, a national club. You can go to the AKC website and look up Malamutes, and they will direct you to, I would assume, good breeders. I've never looked them up, but I'm assuming. And they can be everywhere, going online to, Malamute puppies, and they usually have big banners and flashing and all that. It's a whole different story about the source of the dog. Because every breed can be bred in puppy mill fashion. Depends on what's hot, what people want. Cavachons are popular right now. It's a Cavalier-Bichon mix. Yeah, they're really popular, and they're cute. But no good, reputable person out there is going... Golden Doodles. Mine came from a puppy mill. I know
really?
She did. Sure. Nobody out there in the golden retriever world is deliberately breeding golden doodles. They wouldn't do it. It's against the Golden Retriever Club of America code of ethics. You can't do that. But they'll do it. Some will do it. But so anyway, and I acquired her from the shelter because this is what happens to a lot of these dogs that come from a lot of, especially some of these designer mixes that don't live up to the expectations of the people that purchased them, and they don't care how much money they spent. I got Andy because she shed a few hairs on the floor. She was only 12 weeks old. So, these places won't take your money back. They won't exchange dogs with you. You're stuck with it, so they take them to the shelter. And that happened to a lot of the puppies that came from our local puppy purveyor. They came into the shelter.
So what's key to solving this problem? And what's on the horizon?
I'll let Jim answer that one because I don't know. It's such a huge insurmountable issue. And what happens when they start to, and this occurs throughout the country, they'll start to, like the USDA or Department of Ag, look at people that breed a certain number of litters per year. Well, then you're starting to look at your good breeders that may have 2 or 3 litters a year. They're not puppy mills, but they fall within the parameters of what the organization defines as a puppy mill. And it gets to be a very gray, dangerous area. We have them here. We have them right here where they're down in Arthur. There's puppy mills. And you can go to Arthur, but what they've done there is they've built big enclosures around their kennels so they're not visible. So you can go to Arthur and enjoy Arthur not knowing that that's where a lot of puppies come from.
Hmm. Jim, you have anything to add?
Well, it's a huge topic, and it's one that occupies a lot of people full time. I should get closer, I suppose. You mentioned Arthur. There are, we have a friend who's a vet tech who spoke to what we would call a group of puppy mill people. And if you can say they're responsible puppy mill people, they are in the sense that they go to vet techs, they have veterinarians. But these people individually, some of these were producing 500 puppies a year. And in our Robin and our lifetimes, which grow shorter every day, we will never produce 500 puppies ever. Significantly less than that. We may hit 100 after 40 years of breeding. But these people are due 500 a year. And now they're meeting all the minimum standards required and all that sort of thing. So you have to stop. Well, if they're obeying the law, what are we going to do? Go in and get the seals to go in and wipe them out? I don't. They're following what Illinois says is the parameters, and in Missouri, what Missouri says are requirements. The caller probably got a dog from somebody who's not trying to follow all the laws, let's say, those people exist too. But it's a great grand problem. If you go back about 60 or 70 years, we didn't have animal shelters for the most part. We had small humane organizations, but they didn't have shelters. And I was thinking, like in my own family, if our dog had puppies, now I was just a lad of five or something like this, but the puppies would disappear one day, and they all went to the farm out in the country. So there wasn't a big overpopulation problem. And I've often said, and this is nothing negative about it, but mm-hmm. for example, the Greyhound rescue from racetracks, well, that gave racetrack people an out. They could say, we don't put our race dogs down when their racing life is over. We find rescue shelters for them. So they pass the problem off to somebody else. They look like they're humane, and they keep producing unwanted greyhounds. So how do you solve the problem when sometimes the problem is exacerbating the problem itself, the solution is? Off the top of my head, those are my thoughts.
It's a huge, immense problem.
Yeah.
And it's not even just the United States. They've got them all. They're everywhere.
Yeah, there's hundreds of millions of dogs running around. And when we run out of food, they're probably going to be the first protein source that humans turn to.
Oh, please.
And then the cockroaches.
Not on top of the ticks.
The cockroaches will take over.
Oh, gosh. And we have to wrap
he
up
always
now.
Has
I don't
to,
know whether to be happy about wrapping up
He can be gloomy
now,
and
or...
doomy. He worked it in there that he and Robin, their lives are getting shorter. I knew that you would find a way to bring something like that up. He
well, she's going to Paris. You know, she's going to walk down the Champs-Élysées.
We're only in midlife, Jim.
Yes.
There you go. Zen, we'll see you next month, I hope.
Maybe.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, right? Okay.
And it'll be August. My gosh.
Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs. Happy Independence Day to the two of you and to our listeners.
Thank you.
Enjoy it.